The Merciful. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasir Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
همین موضوع چشم زخم، شما ببینید آخر سوره قلم آیه دارد دیگه.
In آیه 51 of سوره القلم we can see the reference to the concept of evil eye. In this آیه we read, indeed the faithless almost devour you with their eyes when they hear the reminder, and they say, he is indeed crazy. As you see, we have the concept of devouring with eyes.
مفسرین زیل این آیه نوشتن که تأثیری که در چشم روی افراد هست انکار ناپذیره.
Now, most of the commentators of the Holy Quran believe that this ayah refers to the concept of evil eye and how an eye has the power to destroy or affect someone. This phenomenon can also be seen in other religions or sects too. We have some ascetics who can do great things with their eyes. For instance, they can kill the pain, change an enemy to a friend, and do other extraordinary things. Eye has a special power. Eye can send messages, and one of its effects is devouring someone or something. Thus, the concept of the evil eye is true, and there are many references to this concept in the Holy Quran and traditions. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasir Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight. Following revelations 2 years ago by NBC7 San Diego that some journalists and others were targeted for questioning when crossing from Tijuana, Mexico, the Donald Trump administration maintained that the incidents were limited to San Diego and a handful of U.S. citizens. But the new documents proved the operation went further and raised questions about how many others were targeted. We're prepared for an article written by Dara Lind. The piece is titled, Trump Officials Use Secret Terrorism Unit to Question Lawyers at Border. The article has been taken from the Truth Out website. Taylor Levy couldn't understand why she'd been held for hours by U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials when crossing back into El Paso, Texas, after getting dinner with friends in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, in January of 2019. And she didn't know why she was being questioned by an agent who'd introduced himself as a counterterrorism specialist. Taylor Levy was part of the legal team representing the father of a girl who died the previous month in the custody of the Border Patrol, which is part of the CBP. She recalled there was so much hate for immigration lawyers at that time, adding, I thought that somebody had put in an anonymous tip that I was a terrorist. The truth was more troubling. Newly released records show that Taylor Levy was swept up as part of a broader than previously known push by the administration of President Donald Trump to use the federal government's expansive powers at the border to stop and question journalists, lawyers, and activists. The records reveal that Levy and attorney Hector Ruiz were interrogated by members of CBP's secretive tactical terrorism response team. The lawyers were suspected of providing assistance to the migrant caravan that was then the focus of significant attention by the administration and right-wing media. Officials speculated in later reports that immigration lawyers were seeking to profit by moving migrants through Mexico, and that Antifa may have been involved. The records were provided to ProPublica by the Santa Fe Dreamers Project, a public interest law firm and advocacy group that received them after filing a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit about the stops of Levy and Ruiz at the border in El Paso, Texas. Following revelations 2 years ago by NBC7 San Diego that some journalists and others were targeted for questioning when crossing from Tijuana, Mexico, the Trump administration maintained that the incidents were limited to San Diego and just a handful of U.S. citizens. But new documents proved the operation went much further and raised questions about how many others were targeted. While the records are heavily redacted, they provide a window into exactly how the targeting system worked. They also show that the push was based in part on claims that were simply wrong. For example, that Taylevy met with members of the caravan in Mexico while they were traveling towards the U.S. border. Responding to questions from ProPublica, a Customs and Border Protection CBP spokesperson said in a statement, in response to incidents in November of 2018 and January of 2019, which included assaults against Border Patrol agents, Customs and Border Protection identified individuals who may have information relating to the instigators and/or organizers of these attacks. Efforts to gather this type of information are a standard law enforcement practice. The statement does not address the targeting of Taylevy and Hector Ruiz, or what role investigators suspected two lawyers in El Paso of playing in attacks on federal agents that were in San Diego, California. The administration of President Joe Biden is continuing to fight several lawsuits filed against the Trump administration over the operation. The Department of Homeland Security's Inspector General promised to investigate the allegations in 2019. As the Customs and Border Protection spokesperson noted to ProPublica, but it has not published its findings. The current head of U.S. Border Patrol is a career agent who was in charge of the San Diego sector when agents there were helping lead the surveillance effort. Neither Taylevy nor Hector Ruiz were told why they were being questioned. What they were asked about didn't give them many clues. Both were questioned about their activities in Mexico, specifically if they had been to Tijuana recently. They were questioned about their jobs and educational backgrounds. Hector Ruiz was asked about the funding of the Santa Fe Dreamers Project, where they worked as an attorney. Both lawyers also recall being asked about their beliefs. Taylevy remembers an agent asking her why she worked for a Catholic aid organization if she didn't believe in God. While Hector Ruiz told ProPublica they were asked about their opinions of the Trump administration and the economy. Government notes of their interviews provided as part of the lawsuit don't reference those questions, but they do cite comments from both Taylevy and Hector Ruiz criticizing Donald Trump's border policies. Hector Ruiz ultimately agreed to a phone search, despite their concerns about agents reading privileged attorney-client communications, which is exactly what the agents did. The records note that the use of WhatsApp to communicate with people described as foreign nationals, Hector Ruiz's clients. Ruiz didn't tell anyone about their late-night interrogation for weeks after it happened. When they learned the same thing had happened to Taylevy, and when the NBC7 story appeared 2 months later showing that similar episodes in San Diego had been part of a deliberate targeting effort, the El Paso lawyers sought to find out if they had been on the same watch list. So Hector Ruiz's then colleague, Allegra Love, filed a Freedom of Information Act request, followed by a lawsuit. This spring, they finally got a complete enough set of documents to piece the truth together. What exactly the interrogations of Taylor Levy and Hector Ruiz were trying to uncover still isn't clear. Taylor Levy and Hector Ruiz both got the impression that they were being accused of coaching asylum seekers to lie to border agents. The newly disclosed records don't include anything about that, at least not in the unredacted text. But they do say that Hector Ruiz admitted to facilitating the migrant caravan by providing legal guidance free of charge and educate the migrants with the asylum process. The accusation that telling asylum seekers about how US law works is facilitating their entry reflected a broader suspicion that asylum seekers were trying to subvert US law rather than accessing a legal right. One Border Patrol email from San Diego side of the targeting operation obtained in a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit by NBC7 and the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press and shared with ProPublica referred to crossing the border to claim asylum as exploiting a loophole. A Border Patrol intelligence report from El Paso, Texas, written several months after Taylor Levy and Hector Ruiz were interrogated and included in the newly released documents, cast further aspersions on asylum lawyers. The report states, mass migration from South America into the United States is said to be coordinated at some level by non-profit organizations who wish to line their pockets with proceeds deriving from migrants' transportation fees up to the U.S.-Mexico border, and ultimately proceeds deriving from the migrants paying for their asylum case lawyers once they have arrived to the United States. It goes on to associate this effort with other groups such as Antifa. The report also asserts inaccurately that Taylor Levy and Hector Ruiz were seen in Tijuana assisting with the migrant caravan. Now that the lawyers know more about why they were stopped and by whom, they are all the more concerned it could happen again. Taylor Levy has since moved to California, but told ProPublica she fears retaliation for this article. Hector Ruiz still crosses the border multiple times a week for work. They told ProPublica, "I'm still super fearful," adding, "I don't know if this is the day they're going to detain me yet again. The caravans and Donald Trump are both gone, but I'm still doing this work. I don't know what sort of false accusations they can throw again going forward."
Gaza and the other Palestinian territories have been simmering with anger over Israel's stepped-up land grab policies in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds, as well as the regime's desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex, one of the holiest sites in Islam. Days after the regime launched a heavy-handed crackdown on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the holy fasting month of Ramadan, tensions spiraled into a broader conflict between Gaza and Israel. Since last Monday, the Israeli military has been launching large-scale airstrikes against Gaza, razing many homes and civilian infrastructure to the ground. The regime's artillery and tanks have also been targeting the blockaded coastal enclave, killing and injuring scores of people, including women and children. Meanwhile, the Palestinian resistance groups have been responding to Israel's acts of aggression with massive barrages of rockets and missiles. They have also brought drones into the equation. Much to Israel's surprise, rocket launches have largely overwhelmed the regime's anti-missile system, dubbed the Iron Dome, and hit several cities across the occupied territories, leaving several dead and dozens of others injured.
So, of course, the Zionists have always believed that they have been protected behind what they called an Iron Dome, that missile defense shield that they believed would defend them from all attacks either from Palestinian resistance forces or from the wider Arab and Islamic world, such as Syria, Lebanon, and Iran. Now, we have seen, of course, that this Iron Dome is more like an iron sieve nowadays, because the amount of missiles, hundreds and hundreds of missiles that have gotten through and have landed, some of them in strategic places such as cities near the Gaza Strip or near Ben Gurion Airport in the occupied in Zionist city of Tel Aviv.
Meanwhile, the regime in Tel Aviv has been under criticism worldwide, with many supporters of the Palestinian cause in Muslim countries and elsewhere holding rallies in solidarity with the Palestinians. As the exchange of fire between the Israeli army and the resistance groups continue, the tensions in the occupied West Bank has reached a fever pitch. So far, several incidents have been recorded where mobs of settlers raided and vandalized Palestinian shops or attacked Palestinian Arabs there.
They are so high up in the clouds, let's say, of their own superiority, of their own master race status, let's say, in the region, that they don't really believe in the possibility of resistance in the region really making a dent in the Zionist armor. And what we have seen now is that there is way more than a dent in the armor. The Palestinians have broken through this armor.
While the Israeli attacks on Palestinians have been met with international condemnation, the United States has stopped short of denouncing the regime's crimes. Washington blocked a UN Security Council meeting on the Palestinian situation and prevented the world body from releasing a statement on the issue, saying that such a move would not be helpful to de-escalation talks with the two sides. Washington's support for the regime has sparked an outcry inside the United States, too. Several Democratic members of the U.S. Congress have lashed out at the regime and slammed the United States' unconditional support for it.
We must condition aid to Israel on compliance with international human rights and end the apartheid. We must, with no hesitation, demand that our country recognize the unconditional support of Israel has enabled the erasure of Palestinian life and the denial of the rights of millions of refugees.
As Israel ramps up its attacks on the people of Palestine, such calls for its boycott are growing stronger. But how many more lives should be lost before the voices are heard?
Iran and the remaining signatories to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action are continuing their talks in Vienna to save the nuclear agreement nearly 3 years after Washington's unilateral withdrawal in 2018. The United States is complicating the negotiations by insisting on keeping in place 500 anti-Iran sanctions, including in the 2015 nuclear deal, officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. Informed sources say if kept in place, the sanctions on these 500 individuals and entities will prevent Iran from doing business with the rest of the world, which is in violation of Article 29 of the agreement. This is while Tehran has time and again reiterated that Washington has to take the first step towards reviving the nuclear deal by unconditionally removing all sanctions in a verifiable manner.
It has been the United States who left the JCPOA, who withdrew from the JCPOA. It is the United States who should come first, who should implement its obligations and lift all of its sanctions. And then Iran would verify, and after open verification, Iran would restart its obligations in the JCPOA.
Tehran has also reiterated its calls that the United States has to remove not some, but all sanctions on the Islamic Republic.
Well, our position is quite clear. All sanctions should be lifted. All sanctions which are mentioned in the JCPOA, and any new sanctions imposed after the adoption day of the JCPOA, including everything during Trump administration. This is our position, it's quite clear, and we are working to come to a conclusion which meet our demands on the sanctions lifting area.
The comments by Araghchi comes as the JCPOA has been in disarray since May 2018, when former U.S. President Donald Trump abandoned the deal and reimposed the anti-Iran sanctions that the JCPOA had removed. The Trump administration has also placed additional sanctions on Iran under other pretexts not related to Iran's nuclear energy program as part of its maximum pressure campaign. The negotiations in Vienna come as the new U.S. administration has expressed readiness to compensate for Trump's mistake and rejoin the deal. It is, however, showing an overriding willingness to maintain some of the sanctions as a tool of pressure. Many believe that the U.S. refusal to remove anti-Iran sanctions would mean the talks are about to fail or have already failed.
I think that we are in a very important situation right now. We will know in the coming days whether the talks will succeed or in fact fail. And the pressure is currently on Washington, because while the Iranian government stands firmly together in their refusal to renegotiate agreements that have been in the works for years now, the American side is completely disorganized, and it's not sure whether President Biden will remain the majority leader in both houses of Congress for the foreseeable future.
Some also believe that there is a possibility that the U.S. will resort to the old tactic of agreeing to a nuclear deal with all of its benefits on paper, yet intimidate other countries from doing business with Iran using the threat of sanctions like it did during the 2015 nuclear agreement. Iran says it will not allow the negotiations to become attritional. Iran's top negotiator in Vienna and Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi says the Islamic Republic would stop the negotiations if it concludes that the other side lacks seriousness, tries to buy time, or seek to add new topics to those under discussion. Iran says the ball is now in the U.S.'s court to return to the agreement and remove all sanctions on Tehran, or pursue the failed policy of its predecessor known as Maximum Pressure Campaign and push ahead with its hostile policy against the Islamic Republic. The Biden administration has so far not taken any solid measure to return to the deal over 100 days after it took the helm in Washington. The next 2 weeks will be decisive, and the negotiations could go either way. More attacks by Israeli forces against Palestinians in the occupied Jerusalem Al-Quds. On Monday, over 300 Palestinians were wounded after Israeli troops fired rubber bullets on them around the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Scores were detained by Israeli forces. The protests erupted after Israeli troops stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in an effort to force out the Palestinians. The violence around the mosque and the Old City were the worst since 2017, fueled by a years-long bid by Israeli settlers to take over Palestinian homes in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. The Israeli regime is also celebrating its 1967 occupation of Jerusalem Al-Quds.
There are several facts here. One is that this is a process of, once again, of ethnic cleansing in broad daylight. It is a provocation, obvious provocation against Islam, and has appropriately been denounced by most Arab countries, including a couple of them who are overly anxious to normalize relations with Israel and hopefully will now reconsider what they've done.
Sheikh Ikrimah Sabri, the imam and preacher of Al-Aqsa Mosque, has condemned the attack, calling the raid a heinous crime that cannot be tolerated. Leader of the Palestinian National Initiative Party, Mustafa Barghouti, called the Israeli raid on Al-Aqsa Mosque compound a criminal act. Barghouti described the raid as a racist act by an apartheid regime.
Well, Israel is indisputably an apartheid state. It always has been from the outset, from 1948 on. It simply wasn't called that. The apartheid nature of Israel was confirmed in 1967 when it invaded the West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem. Mustafa Barghouti is absolutely 100% right when he calls it a criminal act.
The military brigade of the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, also warned against the presence of Israeli forces in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The situation is so fluid, and resistance movements fired tens of rockets toward occupied Palestine Monday afternoon. The clashes in Al-Aqsa Mosque have drawn widespread condemnation from the international community. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres urged Israel to cease demolitions and evictions, saying Israeli authorities must exercise maximum restraint. The U.S. government, however, stopped short of condemning the Israeli aggression against Palestinians. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan instead conveyed serious concern to his Israeli counterpart about violent confrontations in Jerusalem al-Quds. Arab nations, including Syria, Iraq, and Qatar, also hit out at Israel over the Jerusalem violence. Some Arab countries, including those that last year normalized relations with Israel, condemned the Israeli aggression. Iran, Pakistan, and many other nations also slammed the attack. In Britain, Germany, Turkey, Jordan, and elsewhere, people took to the streets to condemn the Israeli regime's atrocities and voice solidarity with the Palestinian people. In some countries, like Oman, people gathered in front of the Israeli embassy to condemn the raids.
It's clear, I think, to the peoples of the world, even if it's not necessarily to political classes in the Occident, in the West, that Israel is the Israeli regime is a criminal entity, and what they're seeing practiced against the Palestinian people, Palestinian worshippers, which is really a reflection of a process that's gone on for far too long and backed by Western governments, specifically Washington and its allies. So there's no surprise in the fact that people everywhere in the world are outraged.
The Israeli desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque is nothing new. Israel has done similar acts in the past many times. Tel Aviv has been violating the rights of Palestinians with impunity since its installment in the region by its Western creators. The regime enjoys full support from the U.S. in particular.
The reason that Israel was created in the first place was that it was meant to be a foothold for British expansion into the region and to the control of oil and gas, natural gas resources in the region.
What is clear is the fact that the Israeli aggression against Palestinians cannot end through dialogue. Israel has defied calls to stop violating the rights of Palestinians for decades. Many factions in Palestine have also come to the conclusion that Israel can be pushed back only through resistance, and that any effort short of resistance will come to nothing given Washington's all-out support for the Israeli regime at the UN Security Council, the only world body that can issue a binding resolution against the regime.
The people of Palestine have long suffered aggression at the hands of Israel, but that escalated to epic proportions in this Ramadan. The regime launched a crackdown on Palestinian worshippers and restricted their gatherings in the old city of Jerusalem al-Quds during the Muslim holy month. Later in the month, an Israeli court ruled that over a dozen Palestinian families must leave their homes in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in East Jerusalem al-Quds immediately, despite having lived there for generations. The eviction order sparked several protests in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The crackdown on Ansud injured hundreds of Palestinians. It also drew condemnations from the international community against Israel, with even the Arab countries that have recently normalized ties with the regime, namely Sudan, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain, denouncing the Israeli forces' storming of the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
It's not only the general oppression of Israel, but Israel got very aggressive with the district of Jerusalem, Sheikh Jarrah, where they want to get rid of all the remaining Palestinian families. The Israelis, I think, did not anticipate what they were stepping into when they chose to evict all of these families at the same time in the month of Ramadan.
The United Nations Human Rights Office urged Israel to cease the eviction order immediately. It said the transfer of parts of an occupying power's civilian population into the territory that it occupies is prohibited under international humanitarian law and may amount to a war crime. Israel has been trying to downplay the recent clashes, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu strongly rejecting international pressure not to build settlements in Jerusalem al-Quds.
We also firmly reject the pressures not to build in Jerusalem. To my regret, these pressures have been increasing of late. I say also to the best of our friends, Jerusalem is Israel's capital, and just as every nation builds in its capital and builds up its capital, we also have the right to build in Jerusalem and to build up Jerusalem. That is what we have done, and that is what we will continue to do.
But under international law, all Israeli settlements are deemed illegal. The United Nations Security Council has condemned Israel's settlement building activities in the occupied territories in several resolutions. Jerusalem al-Quds remains at heart of a decades-long conflict, with Palestinians insisting that East al-Quds, illegally occupied by Israel since 1967, must serve as the capital of a Palestinian state. In the meantime, the Al-Aqsa Mosque has had enormous significance throughout the years. In the year 2000, an Israeli official's visit to the holy site provoked a Palestinian uprising known as the Second Intifada. Observers say the recent escalation of violence surrounding the Al-Aqsa Mosque could be a prelude to a third intifada.
As far as I'm concerned, an intifada is always possible in Palestine. The Israelis are putting more and more pressure. They're hoping to keep the pressure at just the right level to cause, to motivate the ethnic cleansing, the expulsion of the Palestinians, the marginalization of the Palestinians, without having it explode completely.
Emboldened by former U.S. President Donald Trump's all-out support, Israel has stepped up its aggression against the Palestinian people. But with Trump gone, for how long can it keep on committing its crimes?
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, Islam's policy against usurpation. Allama Tabatabai has said, taking the property of another person and owning it without any legitimate reason of possession and forcibly occupying the property of another person in order to benefit from its profits without the intention of legally claiming it as one's own property is called ghasb, which is translated as usurpation according to Islamic Sharia. Thus, the ghasb, which is usurpation, it means exercising control over the property of others without having any legitimate means of control such as bay or rent or permission. It becomes quite clear that ghasb, usurpation, is an indecent act which violates the very principle of ownership, just as the principle of ownership plays an effective role in the establishment and survival of the society. The ghasb, on the other hand, the usurpation of property, on the other hand, ruins and brings the society to a standstill. One of the issues that our societies are crumbling is this very problem of usurpation of other properties and wealth. This illegitimate occupation of others' properties and wealth is something which is haram in Islam, right? This is something which is forbidden in Islam. So make sure that if you're interested in a property, either buy it or do a contract, some sort of contract with the other party or the owner of that property. And generally speaking, you know, if we go down that route, we can work things out. But usurpation is not an option for a Muslim. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing Islam's policy against usurpation. Well, possession of a property and ownership will become invalid if the influential people of a society decide to gain control over the produce and outputs of the labor of the weak and the subordinates. And this is again another issue that we see sometimes prevalent throughout the world, that somebody else does the hard work and, you know, this special elite class, it just reaps all the benefits, right? while they just give, you know, pennies, you know. You all know about child labor, you all know about cheap labor, you all know about those things, right? Now, does the idea of the transgression of the influential people over the personal rights of the helpless people would become predominant in the society? Consequently, in this situation, the subordinates and the weak will embark on any kind of submission, dishonor, and disrespect in order to benefit from the output of their efforts and endeavors. Thus, the human society will be converted into a market in which the slaves are bought and sold, and the laws and policies of the society will become entirely invalid and will be replaced by coercion and oppression. So, brothers and sisters, it just doesn't stop at, you know, illegally occupying somebody's piece of land, for instance. No, it is such a disease, this usurpation of property and wealth and others' belongings, that it would take up the entire society and swallow it, right? This is why Islam has formulated strict policies for the usurper and considers usurpation a mortal sin. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parsetoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
French musician has come up with an innovative idea to end his pandemic hiatus, performing on top of a mountain in Swiss Alps. Kehoe performed on a platform at an altitude of 3,000 meters. The 30-year-old artist braved sub-zero temperatures in April to perform. He also had to overcome his fear of heights. Kehoe has not performed in public for more than a year due to COVID-19 restrictions. He says the lockdown offers him a good chance to become more creative.
I feel like I had a lot of creativity during this period because I was stuck in the studio and a lot of time to make music. So usually when I perform gigs and I don't have so much time to spend in the studio. So today, during these days, is like better.
A music production company organized the show. The small platform was taken up to the resort by helicopter. It took 4 hours to install the setting. A Chinese version of the Titanic has been created to keep alive memories of the ship over a century after its ill-fated maiden voyage. The full-scale replica will soon be open to the public. It's part of a theme park in Sichuan Province, southwest of China. The construction work started 6 years ago, involving over 100 workers. Around 23,000 tons of steel has been used to build the ship. That's 260 meters long. Designers hope that it will attract up to 5 million visitors a year.
The ship is located in the west part of China. It will attract tourists from the world. We estimate that the number of visitors will be between 2 million to 5 million in a year. This tourist volume should guarantee the return of our investment.
Everything in the duplication, from cabins to doorknobs, is identical to the organic Titanic, that is, original Titanic. Spending one night on the five-star ship cost around $150. The original luxury vessel sank in April 1912 after hitting an iceberg. Over 1,500 people died in the accident. Animals living in the Paris Zoological Park will soon be able to see visitors again after months of just interacting with zookeepers due to COVID-19 restrictions. The zoo is preparing to reopen next week with limited numbers of visitors and obligatory health protocols. During the shutdown, the park welcomed over 60 new babies, including baboons, penguins, and flamingos. Experts believe the reopening will be, that is, will reawaken animals' curiosity.
Seeing public again will reawaken the animals' curiosity. They also look at the visitors. Some are very interested. You'll see the seals when they're with small children. It's part of enriching their environment to see a little bit of people, of diversity. So it's good for everyone.
The park, which temporarily closed last October, houses 2,500 animals of 234 species. France is now easing its COVID-19 restrictions and plans to reopen museums, zoos, shops, and cinemas on May the 19th. Looking for a cheaper and more sustainable alternative to traditional lawn mowers? Chip may be the answer. Researchers at the University of California, Davis, have embarked on a project to test the effectiveness of sheep as new lawn mowers. The project includes 25 sheep of four different breeds. They are going to graze on a one-acre plot of pasture for 3 days. The process will be repeated after a month.
The sheep have been used for a couple of things. So they're as good as goats in reducing down the vegetation. So in areas where there is, it doesn't just have to be a lawn. If they're in their areas where there's overgrown and you've got sort of those higher fuel ladders, they can eat that down. But what they also do, so they can cut that out, but then they also can come around and after there's been a fire, they're really good at eating the weeds that come up initially, the weeds that we don't want, those invasive weeds.
Researchers believe that the initiative also has an environmental impact. With fewer mowers, there might be less emission. They also hope using sheep will help increase natural fertilization and nutrient levels.
Using unusual array of tools for a haircut, that's what a Pakistani barber does to rise above the competition. Ali Abbas lives in the city of Lahore, eastern Pakistan. He uses blowtorches, meat cleavers, and even broken glass to do a cut. He typically begins a haircut with a blowtorch to take a bit off the top. He then uses a cleaver and butcher's block and sometimes broken glass to cut the lower layers. His style is proving to be a hit.
This idea was not a joke. One day I was thinking of doing something different. It was my desire to do something in a different way. Since I started this, my customers have increased. People's confidence has been boosted. When you're visible on a platform and people see you, people will say, we must try this, we should try this.
Abbas has been using this style since 2016. He says he has received a very good response from his clients. His peculiar approach has also resulted in TV appearances and fashion shoots.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
It's not an everyday scene for Londoners to see a whale swimming in the River Thames, but over the weekend, the city witnessed a small whale being rescued after it got stuck along the river. The baby whale was first spotted in the evening, becoming stranded on the Lock's boat rollers in Richmond. Rescuers worked during the night to free the 4-meter-long whale. After 4 hours, the injured animal was successfully moved to a safer location.
A vet is now monitoring its situation to make sure it's healthy enough to be released back to the ocean.
People around the world dream of having special weddings, but these couples in Russia have made their wishes come true. 30 couples in Moscow have gotten married on cable car cabins, hoping to set a world record. The sweethearts exchanged vows mid-air with a picturesque view of rainy Moscow. If the attempt to set a record is verified and confirmed, it will go to the Guinness Book of World Records. The wedding ceremony in Russia has turned into an extraordinary one as it was celebrated on a 720-meter-long cable car. 30 Russian couples tied the knot in the moving cable car cabins on Saturday. Even rainy weather in Moscow didn't stop them. The newlyweds said they wanted to make their already special day as unusual as possible. They also hoped that their mass wedding would set a Guinness World Record. The remains of 9 Neanderthals have been found near the Italian capital, Rome. Archaeologists believe the oldest one is dated to around 100,000 years ago. The other 8 remains are dated between 50,000 and 68,000 years ago. Researchers unearthed the fossil fragments in the Guattari prehistoric cave, or caves I should say, near Rome. Neanderthals are the closest ancient relatives of humans. They died out about 40,000 years ago. Some theories say they died because of their inability to adapt to climate change.
Thousand drones have lit up the sky of a northwestern Russian town in a dazzling show commemorating the country's victory in World War II. The drones flew in formation and displayed images related to the deadliest war in history. The show ended with a giant dove of peace flying above mesmerized spectators. Russia commemorates its victory day on May the 9th every year. There is also an annual parade which the authorities decided to postpone due to the coronavirus pandemic. Humans have used the services of honeybees for centuries. Now, Dutch scientists have found a way to get help from these small animals in detecting the coronavirus. Let's have a listen.
We take the bees from a honeybee keeper here in the region, and we use a set of bees every day, and we put those bees in harnesses to fix them. And then we present coronavirus positive and coronavirus negative samples. And after presenting a positive sample, we always present sugar water afterwards. So in the end, the bees extend their proboscis after being presented a coronavirus positive sample. And in that way, we can train bees pretty quickly.
The bees indicate a positive COVID-19 result by extending their tongue to drink a reward of sugar water. Using these insects as coronavirus testing tools can significantly shorten the time spent on waiting for the result of a COVID diagnosis. It can also be very important in countries where there is not enough infrastructure and testing. Bees have an unusually strong sense of smell. They have already been used in some parts of the world to detect explosives and toxins.
IRIB English Radio.